T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto, and Matt Kolsky, broadcasting in beautiful downtown San Francisco. This is Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Bill Withers would have called it a lovely day. He would have been right about that. Today was supposed to be the San Francisco Giants home opener. Therefore, maybe their best day of the entire season. No team in the Bay does a better job wrapping its fans in nostalgia than the San Francisco Giants. Bill Withers wrapped generations of music fans in the nostalgia of his music. He passes away due to a heart attack. That is just another reason why I'm not in the best mood ever, but we have a great show for you here on 95.7 The Game. As if trying times weren't enough, Bill Withers has to pass away. One of the great musicians. I know a lot of you youngsters listening might not be familiar with Bill Withers. I do know the two gentlemen I'm working today are savvy enough and soulful enough to have appreciated that man. Ray Ratto, John Dickinson, how you guys doing today? It's good to be with you.
I continue to be horizontal.
Outstanding. Outstanding.
Yeah, Bill Withers, legend. Just that one, they all get you, especially now, but that one got me even as someone under 40.
Let me tell you.
Among our trio.
Bill Withers live at Carnegie Hall. Listen to the recording of what is it? Baloney in Harlem. Oh, it's just incredible. Bill Withers, man, he was one of the best. We've got a great show for you today. We really do, guys. It might have been the home opener. It would have been the home opener for the Giants, and they really do. They do on field ceremony better than anyone, and it's not even close. I know you get misty enough, JD, about a beautiful day at the ballpark to appreciate the pomp and circumstance that comes with opening day. It's actually better for the media the day after opening day because the press box clears out of all the Johnny-come-latelys. But I got to tell you, you know, if you like baseball, I think you like all the bunting and the ceremony that comes with it. John Miller, Kruk and Kipe, Flem, Rennell, all of them are A-plus masters of ceremonies. It would have been a real nice day to get together and watch a little Giants and Dodgers in person for the first time in a long time. But we don't get to do that. Like, we don't get to do a whole bunch of things these days.
Yeah, I love opening day. And I'll to just give you an example. I've gone to an opening day game, either covering it or just as a baseball fan, every day, every year, going all the way back to 2002. So that takes me into my early 20s. And even before that, I think every year except one or two, going all the way back to 1997. So this is like sometimes maybe with my father, you know, when I was still, you know, a teenager, all the way through, you know, college years, and then getting into the business where I was, you know, covering baseball as well. Opening day is always a special day for me. Just, you know, because everything old is kind of new again, and it's just fun to be at the yard and celebrate a new season, regardless of your role in it, whether it's fan or media member or whatever.
I've always been a fan of day two for the reason you gave. It clears out the people who don't like or know baseball but feel like they have to show up because other people are there. I mean, I just, it's, the players like it more because it's just normal. I think everybody within the game finds opening day to be a regal pain in the keister. But, you know, for fans, it's a different thing because the first thing is always the best thing. But for me, it was always day two. If I could skip opening day, I'd do it.
A lot of hoi polloi, no doubt about it. But it is fun to see people excited, and it would have been fun. And the level of excitement this year for Giants fans probably wouldn't have had much to do with the actual on-field product. It would have just been seeing old friends and coming back to what is a beautiful yard. And it would have been a beautiful day at the yard today. Was it going to be the day they were going to honor the 10-year anniversary of the 2010 team, or was that supposed to be later on in the season? Like, the Giants are smart. They know how to dole it out in little pieces. They don't give it all away on opening day. So I don't know if that was supposed to be today or later on in the year, but it's one of the things.
You wouldn't do that on opening day, right? Because you need it for day 40 or 57 76.
You don't want to shoot all the arrows in your quiver right when the battle starts. So they probably would have doled it out a little bit later on. Aubrey Huff, not invited. We all know it. But it really is. Today's one of those days where you ask, you know, what are the moments that get you? What are the times that you mark the calendar with? And like you said, JD, opening day has been a reality for you since your early 20s. I've been covering an opening day either at, you know, the Coliseum or AT&T/Oracle Park since, man, I don't think I've missed an opening day on either side of the bay, or at least one opening day in, you know, nearly 15 years. Since I've been out here, I do love getting back to the yard. It would have been great to get back there today. We will be looking at the Stratomatic outcome before it's all said and done. Stratomatic measuring things that you wouldn't even expect them to measure, like time of game, simulated game, what the attendance might have been. I'm sure today would have been good attendance, but, you know, what day two's attendance will be, according to Stratomatic, I guess we'll keep an eye on that. I don't know if they tell us how many cha-cha bowls they sell or who gets booed or anything like that, but we will have Ray take us through play-by-play almost every inning of the Stratomatic simulation for the Giants today. It'll be just like the Dodgers are in town, we promise. We've obviously got some coronavirus news that we've been going over, trying to share with you the most accurate information today. I got to tell you guys, I was blown away by a video chat that Salesforce employees were privy to, and I eavesdropped on a gentleman whose name is Dr. Larry Brilliant. Now, I know that sounds like a magician in Las Vegas, like you got Larry Brilliant tickets, but that's his name, Dr. Larry Brilliant. He is a leading epidemiologist and is the leader of the team that eradicated smallpox in the mid-70s. Smallpox, by the way, is the only disease in recorded human history to be eradicated by medicine. He had some fascinating things to share today, some sobering news to share. We will try to pass along some what even dips into complicated information. And then we'll re-explain to you what is happening with COVID-19 with the single greatest song I've heard recorded about it so far to date. We are going to play that for you. And I know that everybody across their timeline, across their social media or Facebook pages, has seen some sort of COVID-19 musical interpretation. I do believe we have stumbled upon the best. I know on the surface, Ray Ratto hates this idea. Ray, I wouldn't do this unless I was sure of it. I guarantee you that you will like the song about COVID-19 that we're going to play on the other side of the break. Would you like to take this bet, a gentleman's bet, that you will or will not like the song that we're going to play?
I'll bet that Ray hates it. I want to liquidate all assets that Ray will hate it.
You're so, all in on Ray's going to hate
in.
It.
I'm all in on Ray will hate it. Although now, you know, to affect the bet, maybe he'll like it because then it will be, you know, essentially foiling me.
Ray, I'm asking you to bet.
You've transferred the bet to who of you do I want to screw more?
Exactly.
But not without knowing what you guys are putting up. I need to know what the stakes are.
I mean, I would get better odds, right? Because the chances of Ray liking the song are almost infinitesimal. So you got to give me good odds. You can't get good odds on Ray not liking the song because Ray doesn't like anything, basically. So I'm going to have to, you know, fade all sorts of against the spread results from a lifetime of Ray not liking things. But I'm willing to do that. I'm willing
to
do it.
I'll take the chalk.
You'll take it?
That's fine.
All right. Gentleman's bet. How about you give me 5-1 odds?
Sure.
So I can win a five, you stand to win a dollar. If Ray doesn't like it, I'll give you a dollar. All right. So Ray, we're going to ask you, and I do believe that you will do this. You will be unbiased. You will give us your honest response. Does Ray like the COVID-19 tune? Bet to be all bets are action. And we're playing next here on 95.7 The Game. We've got Dan Wetzel joining us later this hour. I'm really looking forward to talking to Dan Wetzel, who was a part of The Scheme, the HBO documentary that we talked about quite a bit yesterday and really enjoyed. Dan Wetzel was a part of that documentary, the movie, and he's going to join us today at 2:45. In case you missed any of Steve Kerr yesterday, just spectacular once again. He joins us at 3:20. John Shea at 4:30. John Shea's got a book coming out about Willie Mays, and he's also got some ideas about a full-on Ollie Oxenfree baseball playoff format if we get there. Tim Kirkjian in our 5 o'clock hour again today. We're really looking forward to talking with you as well. 888-957-9570. And we are going to have an active on-air, live, and real-time bet settled. What I think is a COVID-19 parody song that Ray Ratto will actually like and enjoy and endorse. John's got a 5, says I'm wrong. I got a 5. Well, I get a 5 if I'm right. John gets a dollar. 5-1 odds. Here we go. We're going to do it coming up next. By the way, this is all the nonsense, the important stuff, all of it, brought to you by our good friends at Chilton Auto Body. Chilton Auto Body committed to helping maintain a sense of normalcy. All 12 Chilton Auto Body locations remain open to support you, and we'll pick you up and deliver your car when it's ready for the road. Schedule an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com. We're settling this bet. This bet is action, and it's happening next. I mean, how can you walk away from that? We've also got Dan Wetzel a little bit later on this hour and some sobering news from Dr. Larry Brilliant, who, by the way, I've been in touch with. I'm trying to book him for next week. That is how learned and interesting his information was. And how about this information? The NBA Players Association has been asked to take a 50% paycheck reduction. Woo, I don't know if guys are going to be signing up for that one without a fight. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, no Kolsky. We're happy to have John Dickinson in today, who's about to lose $5 to me, coming up next on 95.7 The Game. Turn that up.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes.
Song's unstoppable.
Something without warning love.
It's just such a warm, friendly song. It's like a hug. Keep it going.
Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you.
It's gorgeous outside.
And I know it's gonna
be beautiful out there.
A lovely day.
So good. That's so good. Nash, thank you very much, Lucas, for queuing that one up. Everyone likes that song. I mean, it's hard to get the entire planet to agree on something, right? Does anyone claim to not like this song? Could anyone possibly get away with that claim? I don't think so. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. No Kolsky. JD in all week. And JD, thank you very much. Really appreciate you hanging out all week with us, man. I hate to take $5 from you, but I think I'm about to. I mean, really. We got 5-1 odds that I'm about to play a song that Ray will endorse as the COVID-19 anthem of 2020, and he will actually like the song. I've oversold it, Ray, have you thought any more about this bet, 5-1 odds? Is that still, is that appropriate, or should I be getting like 10-1 on this?
Don't try to screw with the number that you guys got down at 5-1. There's no yeah. past posting here.
Okay, that's fair enough. No past posting at all. All right, I guess without any further ado, then it's time for me to try to win this bet. And Ray, I know you're going to play it down the middle. You have no favorites in the world, so here we go. This is Mr. Daniel Matazzaro, who I found this morning on Twitter with this A-plus effort. I'm calling it the COVID-19 Coronavirus Song of the Year. Hit it, studio.
Now when a virus comes along that's spreading like a plague, and POTUS and his lackeys have been nothing if not vague, well then you've got to trust the CDC and listen well, unless you want to bid our free society farewell. There is a super bad, transmittable, contagious, awful virus. And if we don't act quick in social distance, it will mire us in a stretch of quarantine that lasts until July. A super bad, transmittable, contagious, awful virus. And if you got a better cough in your arm, and if you got a better cough in your arm. Now back in 1918, influenza had its run, but half their docs were busy overseas with World War I. Today we have mass media and scientists to say, if you don't want this virus, well then stay 6 feet away. Super damn important that we practice isolation, because we're asymptomatic while it's in incubation. We'll overwhelm our hospitals if there's not mitigation. It's super damn important that we practice isolation. If we don't do it, then we're all gonna die. If we don't do it, then we're all gonna die. And so I hope at last you take the lesson here to heart, because it's already scary and we're only at the start. If you get bored, just think of the immunocompromised, who can't go much of anywhere unless it's sterilized. Oh, super bad, transmittable, contagious, awful virus. If we don't act quick and social distance, it will mire us in a stretch of quarantine that lasts until July. A super bad transmittable, a super bad transmittable, a super bad transmittable, contagious, awful virus. Super bad transmittable, contagious, awful virus.
Wow, the drum roll, I guess, is to get Ray's verdict. Hold on. Before we get your verdict, Ray, I'd like to know, JD, do you think you've won or lost the bet? What'd you think of that?
I still think I won, but I enjoyed it.
There you go. All right. Ray, what do you think?
The phrase, it will mire us, loses him some points right off the start. Secondly, it sounds like bad Tom Lehrer. Don't know why he needed the drum roll at the end.
There was no drum roll at the end. That was studio.
Oh, well, then basically you were trying to make me hate it.
No, the studio should not have played that drum roll at the end. They did not have permission. They took that upon themselves. Oh, the hearts of young men.
Oh, God. Let's set them on fire now while we still can. I definitely don't like it. I mean, I saw it the other day on the internet. And I didn't like it then. I don't like it any better now, but I don't hate it. Now, you guys can fight it out whether it means I like it or not. But my position is I don't hate it as much as I normally would. But repeating the chorus also, not good. So if you need a 50-50 split here, I'd have to lean one way or the other. I definitely hate it more than I like it.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess I got to pay up. It's not quite a push.
That's a win.
That's a win for you, JD. I mean, come on. It's a phonetic, perfect mashup of supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, which isn't exactly an easy thing to pull off. I mean, just from a syllable standpoint alone, right? I mean, there was pretty darn clever lyrics in that.
No, there were some. I mean, but again, it's basically a 50 years later kind of ripoff of Tom Lehrer, who was doing sort of socially relevant stuff like this a long time ago. And, you know, you could find him on YouTube. He was actually much funnier than this guy. So if I hadn't heard him, I might like it more than I do. But I had heard Tom Lehrer, and this was sort of that, only not quite as good. And you don't repeat lyrics either. So,
well, you do when it's the chorus.
No, you don't have. No, you can change course any way you want. There are no rules.
You know how many times Bill Withers tells you it's a lovely day? You like that song.
Oh, I never gave an opinion of that song. You decided I liked it.
Wait. I mean, Ray, if you don't like Lovely Day by Bill Withers, you are dead inside in the way that there's no revival from that. I mean, really?
Well,
are you going to try to tell me you don't like the song just to be arguing? I mean, how can you not like that song? Be honest.
Well, when you said I was dead inside, I felt a warmth inside. No, Bill Withers was very good. And the thing that made him good, though, was not the lyrics for me. It was the fact that just the music was always on point. That's not my favorite Withers song. But, I mean, it didn't offend me. It offended me much less than, you know, the other guy. What do you want from me? This is the opinion you asked for.
No, what I want is honesty, and I know I'm always going to get it. I do appreciate it.
I'll
from you.
Text you my Venmo there, Damon, since we're not going to see each other till probably at least July.
Oh, no, I only settle with a folding cash. You're going to have to hold out for that $1. I hope it's not going to put a wrinkle in your lifestyle. So, Shams, just before we came on the air, well, maybe that's about 45 minutes before we came on the air, said that he has sources. You ready? Sources. Sources say the NBA is proposing to the NBA Players Association that players take a 50% paycheck reduction beginning on April 15th. The NBA Players Association has counter-proposed a 25% reduction of paychecks starting mid-May. Well, okay. I know for a fact that people are being asked to take pay cuts all over the country, certainly all over radio. And it's, to me, there's something that jumps out right away. But, Ray, JD, you hear that? What's the first thing that jumps out to you?
Go ahead, Ray.
You would have to show me that the business of the NBA is in such distress that this is needed to keep everything afloat, which I do not believe. I think this is the owners basically saying, we want you to take a pay cut because you're partners in this, even though you're not partners in it. I'd need to see a better reason why that's, you know, why they're asking for that, other than we're losing money this year. If any of these guys are in danger of having to fold their teams or sell their teams to get out, I'd be more inclined to listen. But I'd need more proof than what I have now.
Right. I need like Century 21 signs in front of arenas, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Must sell, priced to move NBA teams. We can't afford it anymore.
Yeah, if Dan Gilbert, the guy who owns Quicken Loans, needs to put the Cavs up on blocks in the front porch, then I'm more willing to listen to this. This sounds like a way to cut their payroll obligations more than it does the business is in danger. Because I don't think the business is in danger. I mean, there are businesses out there that are
those TV contract checks still cashing? I mean, if they are, if ABC, Turner, and TNT are still sending checks to fulfill a $1 billion television contract, ain't nobody hurting, right?
Well, it's a $24 billion contract over the life of the deal. And I don't know this as an absolute fact, but I believe they are paying at least in year-to-year increments at the start of the year. So they have their cash, I believe, for this year. They might be more strapped next year, but again, I don't see any danger that any of these teams are suddenly going to, you know, become the spirits of St. Louis. So I'm thinking this is more recoup some losses than it is keep the business afloat.
Yeah, and my first thought is this would be a so-called first step if some kind of an agreement isn't reached and an understanding toward coming back sooner than we think, you know, in figuring out a way, again, okay, if we're not going to hold, you know, withhold pay, then let's figure out a way to get the games in, any way possible. And I actually think you could see the players, if they are convinced that the owners are really going to withhold that money, maybe the players all of a sudden are more willing and vocal about wanting to have some semblance of a resumption here sooner than later. That's the part. That was the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah, and that eventually crossed my mind too. And I don't want anyone thinking, well, I have financial incentives that are going to put me in a risky health-wise situation, and I'm going to – I mean, how many people in the world are doing that math right now? I mean, NBA players are going to do that math. You have people who work drive-through windows doing that math. You know, how much money – do I need right now to risk my health to go out and get it? That's a terrible, terrible proposition to put in front of someone, but it's math that eventually everyone has to do. When I look at how the NBA players would react to this math, 50% paycheck reduction across the board, now that to me is a full-on, well, you didn't really want to negotiate it all non-starter, is it? Like, any kind of company-wide pay cut, I think, has to be in proportionate to the paycheck. To ask, just pick a, Eric Paschal to take the same pay cut as a Supermax player is wrong. I think if you're a Supermax player, a guy making $30, $40 million a year can absolutely function, thrive, and live comfortably on half that paycheck. If you're an NBA player making $400,000 a year, whatever the NBA minimum is, to have that, well, now that is a huge financial changer for a lot of guys. And look, everyone is broke or poor on a sliding scale. And I understand that we're talking about people who, oh, no, what happens when they blow a tire in their Bentley? But I think it's got to be tiered to your level of what you do to affect the salary cap more than just straight up across the board, everyone going 50% off.
I think the litmus test or the means test here is the business in danger of going under? Is there any doubt here? Also, where's all this money going to except back to the owners? I don't see that they're putting it aside and making it sort of a joint contribution. I mean, right. This is the millionaires paying the billionaires. Think of it that way, right, and then see what you think.
If it meant nobody in the training room who is wrapping ankles loses a job, not a single person in the parking structure helping players valet park their cars before and after practice, if it automatically affected the NBA's ability to pay everyone who works around the NBA and there was some altruistic element immediately identifiable to it, I'd say it'd be hard to be the guy saying no. But you're right, Ray. As of right now, under the parameters of who gets the money, why do you need the money, I think the NBA Players Association exists to negotiate this, not just say, okay, yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time understanding what this is, other than, well, all the other businesses are asking their people to take pay cuts. Let's give this a go. And 50% is a lot. Even for Steph Curry, 50% is a lot. And then on top of that, people are staring at Steph Curry saying, well, what else are you going to do about this? How much more are you going to give? If all this is millionaires paying billionaires, I don't see a sense in it at all at any percentage. I mean, that all this, what they negotiate is what they negotiate, but I don't see that this is anything other than, alleviating Jim Dolan's pay nut for a few months. I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing the value in it.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, can't the NBA go to the full force majeure? And if they do that, it would be a 50% reduction. At that, in essence, aren't they asking for what they could force anyway? I'd have to continue to. I mean, I'd have to research that a little bit. But
yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Whenever it comes to what are you contractually legally obligated to do in the NBA? Not a GM, never read the fine print of the CBA, so I really don't know. But when it comes to protecting dollars, it's what professional athletes pay agents to do, and this is going to be a tough sell. Again, because who am I helping? Who am I helping? Am I helping the guy who needs help? All right, I'm willing to help then. Am I helping the guy who doesn't need help? Maybe I'm less likely to just go along with the band. An interesting moment. And there's also, the perception of looking uncooperative. And I think that that is something that owners know that the players have to kind of factor into this decision a little bit.
Yeah, I think, there's always that level of blackmail in any negotiation, which is, people think you guys get overpaid. Well, players aren't getting overpaid. Owners are overcharging. I mean, you can look at it that way, too. The fact is, for me, where's this pay cut going to? Who's getting helped here? And the only thing that I know of, unless Shams comes up with another tweet later to explain where that money would go, if this is just a rebate back to the owners, I don't think the players should do anything. I mean, and the fact that they're willing to offer up 25% is a sign that, to me, they've already bought into that principle, and the only thing they're going to argue about is a percentage.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a fair way of looking at it. I just continue to wonder, Damon, if it doesn't lead down that uncomfortable path toward the players want to, in an attempt to recover anything, they try and cobble together, something maybe more quickly than needs to be done. Although, as Ray again, and everyone has so eloquently said, it's not going to be their decision, even if they wanted to do something as far as coming back and playing games.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with coming back to play games. This is about, who's getting what percentage of the money while they're not playing games.
And really, do they mean percentage of pay from here on out or like for the entire year? I still don't know the details of this. Just read that one tweet, but thought it was interesting enough to bring up early on here in the show. Later on in today's show, we've got Steve Kerr, who joined us yesterday for just a great conversation with an all-around good guy. Steve Kerr joins us at 3:20 once again today, replaying Steve Kerr for you. John Shea, live at 4:30. John's got a book out on Willie Mays. He's also got a couple ideas about what baseball could do to salvage whatever the hell it's trying to salvage. And when it comes to talking baseball, Tim Kirchen of ESPN is set to join us today at 5:15. Coming up in about 10 minutes from right now, Dan Wetzel. Dan Wetzel wrote a book called Soul Influence. Christian Dawkins read that book and turned himself into a mover and shaker in the Michigan AAU high school basketball world. Inspired by Dan Wetzel's book, which was a very terse, real look at the underbelly of AAU basketball, basically, Christian Dawkins said, I can do this. I can do this. I am absolutely built to be a part of the AAU culture that puts its hooks in kids and tries to get as much money out of them along their way to becoming pros. It was a fascinating documentary. It's called HBO's The Scheme. And the first domino to fall in the scheme was Christian Watkins reading the book by Dan Wetzel.
Dawkins.
What did I say?
Watkins.
Oh, pardon me. Christian Dawkins.
I didn't want people confused.
We do not want people confused. Absolutely right about that. So we've got Dan Wetzel joining us. I need to be totally honest. I have never read Soul Influence. I've heard people recommend it several times. Ray, JD, have either of you guys read this one?
I did. I have not. Yeah.
Go ahead, Ray. No, it was, as you would expect with Wetzel, a fairly comprehensive look at the seamy underside, and I shouldn't even say underside, the superstructure of college basketball at the top level.
The last Wetzel book that I read, the last one I read was, I think, Death to the BCS. I think he co-authored that one. But did it strike you as just, the whole process is pretty gross as he lays it out.
Well, it's not, I don't know if gross is the right word, unless you include the fact that everybody signed off on this except the players. And it is a reminder of the real problem with college sports at that level of income. Is the more money you throw in, the more players get exploited. You know, when there's no money to take from them or make off their backs, college sports is actually a pretty useful thing. But when there's the more cash you put on the table, the more adult hands want to get in on it. And the fact is, college basketball and college football, you know, basically have the most hands reaching out to get rich while making sure the players don't get paid. If players don't get paid in a sport that generates no money, at least everybody is sharing the lack of money. But college basketball has been sort of on this track, I would say conservatively, for 30 years. And the only thing that's happened is that the occasional street agent has now been turned into an AAU structure in which there are a lot of places that do this. So it's basically a sub industry of the mega industry.
In summation, mo money, mo problems. Dan Wetzel's joining us next. By the way, he also was the executive producer of Killer Inside, which was just the Aaron Hernandez documentary that dropped about a month and a half ago on Netflix, even though that feels like 6 years ago now. That's how everything about a month and a half ago is. I think it's Friday afternoon. It's all sort of blurry. We're just rolling this afternoon. We hope you roll along with us. 888-957-9570 is our number. Everyone, I don't know how you're listening, but you can listen to us anywhere you go just by downloading radio.com, the app, anywhere you get your apps. Make sure you get radio.com. Favorite us, 95.7 The Game. Say, hey, Alexa, hey, Google, play 95.7 The Game. Boom, it's all there. We hope you go ahead and keep looking for us. We certainly are happy to be here talking with you. These are crazy times. No one officially knows what they're doing. So let's kind of figure it all out together, shall we? 888-957-9570. Dan Wetzel, one of the best writers in sports out there. He joins us coming up next. And it's all brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
You guys know what time it is. You about to get twisted with my boys at Wetzel's. I haven't met Wetzel, but he seems like a chill dude.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Appreciate you stopping by. We really appreciate things to talk about from the world of sports, since that's what we're supposed to be, a sports talk radio show. But it's a different world that we're living in now than ever before. It was nice to just kind of dive into a sports topic and lose your mind in it. And that's what I did. That's what all three of us did here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, with John Dickinson in for Matt Kolsky today. And we really, really enjoyed HBO's The Scheme, which was about the corruption of college basketball, how elite players are paid to go to programs, and it's very much happening almost everywhere all the time. And it has to happen. There's a pipeline of underground business because of the complete nonsense, the guise of amateurism that the NCAA wants to sell you, so you keep buying what is essentially indentured servitude from student-athletes, and they can charge $1 billion for an NCAA tournament, much more than $1 billion, and so on and so forth. Dan Wetzel was a part of the documentary in many ways. He was a contributor. He was one of the guys that they turned to as someone they interviewed throughout the documentary. And he's also the gentleman and sports author who wrote the book Soul Influence, which was the genesis of Christian Dawkins wanting to get into all this to begin with. We're very, very happy to have Dan Wetzel join us here, one of the absolute best, a Yahoo Sports columnist, a best-selling author. Dan, thank you very much for joining us here. Damon Ratto and John Dickinson, how are you doing today, Dan?
I am doing great, gentlemen. How are you?
Very well. Thank you so much. Before we get into even the scheme, tell us first about soul influence and what, you know, somebody just lands on the planet. What's the thing they need to know about AAU culture?
Well, soul influence came out 20 years ago. And I can assure you, until about the last few weeks, I was not expecting to discuss that book much anymore. But it was basically kind of one of the first stories about how shoe companies were funding AAU basketball and searching for basically the next Michael Jordan. The book was almost called The Search for the Next Michael Jordan. Probably would have sold better if it was. But they were looking. They couldn't wait until kids got into the NBA. Guys got in the NBA and became stars. You had to get ahead of the game to try to sign them because Michael Jordan made Nike so much money. So Adidas and Nike are having this big war. People didn't really know about it. Now it makes sense. They're searching for the next Michael Jordan. That guy turned out to be LeBron James in 2003. But we didn't know at that time. So that was kind of it. It was all about the characters and the side deals and the almost ridiculous amounts of money, or seemingly ridiculous amounts of money, they were spending to outfit these kids. But what we found is, you know, and you see it now in social influencers and stuff, 15-year-old kids want to know what the other 15-year-olds are wearing. If you're the coolest 15-year-old in your town and you're wearing Nikes, all the kids are going to wear Nikes. And so that concept is much more better understood now. But at the time, it really took very savvy marketers at Nike and Adidas to do it. So that was kind of the start. And then Christian Dawkins apparently read this book and decided, rather than looking at it as an investigative piece, it was like a how-to guide to live his life.
It was like a roadmap.
Yeah. I told him that was not really the purpose of the book, but here we are.
What then makes the FBI investigation and the subsequent HBO documentary different than the book you wrote 20 years ago, other than the change in names? Is this just basically moving all the pieces around and you still end up with the same game board?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the underlying part is the same. So back then it was Sonny Vaccaro and George Raveling, you know, kind of had all these guys, and they had all these AAU coaches who still exist, and they were working on trying to find these players. And it's basically the exact same deal. Now you have Christian Dawkins working with Adidas to do the same thing. Christian Dawkins working with agents and financial planners and all of that. So there was nothing new about it. It's just all of a sudden, rather than a couple, you know, Don Yeager and I, two sports writers, getting in on it, we had this unbelievable change of pace where you had the FBI and the Southern District of New York's, you know, U.S. attorneys. And the Southern District of New York is the office that prosecutes, you know, Ponzi schemes and insider trading and terrorism and like, you know, all the stuff with Donald Trump and things like that, like huge cases, huge complicated cases. And so all of a sudden you're like, my goodness, these guys could actually blow this whole thing up if they really want it. It always seemed like this quaint, kind of ridiculous system where, you know, nobody really got hurt because all you were doing was a rich corporation was giving often underprivileged kids money. So really was no victims here. But all of a sudden here comes the FBI and they're saying there are victims and this is going to be a crime. And all of a sudden you're like, wow, this is going to be a big deal. And then in the end, it wasn't a big deal. So it was really, really odd story over the last 2.5 years.
I'm going to jump in real quick, Dan, because I'm sorry, but why do you think the FBI backed off? Because there was audio. I mean, the conversation that Sean Miller and Will Wade had on FBI wiretap. I mean, to me, it's red-handed, caught dead to rights. I don't even know how either one of those guys has a job today.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they realized it wasn't as interesting of a case. Maybe, that, you know, if you listen to those tapes as much as they're kind of red-handed, can you prosecute? Is there a federal offense there? I mean, it was sketchy to come up with any of these. I don't know. I don't know why they did, but they talked this huge game. You remember 2.5 years ago, they rest 10 guys, and including Christian Dawkins and these assistant coaches, and then they come in and they're basically like, they have this press conference, college basketball, we have your playbook, and you're a college coach, call us now before we call you, and we're coming after you. It's a huge thing. And again, it's, at the time you think, boy, this is serious. This is the FBI, right? This isn't the NCAA saying it. This is the FBI. And why they backed off, I don't know. That's kind of the mystery. I think at the end they just saw they had a very compromised investigation. They had one undercover agent who engaged in some malpractice and different things. And then you had the prosecutors just sort of were like, we got bigger fish to fry, which probably was the case all along. I don't know why they got into this in the first place. These were crimes in search of a victim and crimes in search of a criminal. Christian Dawkins is facing 18 months in prison. And essentially, all he ever did was give people money. Now you can figure out how to make that into some kind of an offense, and they did, but the streets aren't any safer if this guy's in prison. What's he going to do? Don't ever give a high school kid more money. All right, So it's just a weird case, and I think it's pretty interesting the way it's told in the scheme.
Look, the system is clearly broken. My question is, do you see a complete revamp of the system as far as the way college players are recruited? Or is it more likely we're just going to, see everything become open and recruitment's treated like free agency and just for whoever pays the most is going to get their guy and we move in that direction? Which happens first?
I mean, college sports does not want to change, so they're going to keep sticking with this. And the basic problem they have is the players have more value than what the NCAA says. So if you take, there's a kid in the movie, and it was a big player in the case, named Brian Bowen Jr. He was a top 30, he's like the 30th best high school basketball player in his class.
Louisville.
From Saginaw, Michigan. Not number one. It's not Zion Williamson. This is a good player, really good, but not a lottery pick. And Brian Bowen, after his sophomore year of high school, Adidas says, we're going to pay you $20,000 to play for our AAU team in the summer. And now we might sit there and go, that's ridiculous, $20,000 to have a kid play AAU ball, 16 years old. But Adidas knows what they're doing. And so they in capitalism and free markets, you're worth what you're paid. So he gets $20,000. That's his value as a high school sophomore. After his senior year, Adidas says, we'll pay you $100,000 to go to Louisville, who we already sponsor, because we want to help make it more likely that Rick Pitino's Louisville Cardinals make the Final Four, and we're protecting our investment, right? So he's worth $100,000. What the NCAA says is you're not worth anything. You're worth tuition, room, and board. And so what you have is the wheels of capitalism, the wheels of the free market in America, and then you have amateurism saying, no, that's going to stop. You'll never stop capitalism in America. And so all you do is push it to an underground economy. So it's a farce to sit there and say, this kid's not worth anything. He absolutely is. We know that. He's worth $100,000. And as long as that's the case, then the rules will never be followed by most of the people. And until the NCAA appreciates that and changes it up somehow and goes with rules that aren't based on what we did in 1930, let alone 1970, we'll get there, because these kids have huge value. They just do. And especially now with social media, where they can promote themselves. Zion Williamson had almost 2 million Instagram followers in high school. That's a very valuable person, and you can't pretend that he isn't.
Dan Wetzel here on 95.7 The Game from the pages of Yahoo Sports. He's also a best-selling author, one of the best sports journalists out there, journalist with the capital J, as we move into our 3 o'clock hour. And Dan, stick around for Ray's top of the hour station identification. He is available for voiceover work should you need any. Here it is.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
It's a lot like James Earl Jones in This Is CNN, isn't it?
That's about as positive and upbeat as Ray gets. So
I think you might be right. Dan Wetzel here on 95.7 The Game. Is there anyone not paying recruits? And if it's this bad in college basketball, how much worse do you think it is in college football?
I mean, there's people not paying recruits, yeah, but it's recruits. There's very few recruits that aren't being paid by somebody. It doesn't necessarily mean the coach is organizing it. It's a little like Rick Pitino and Brian Bowen. They could never prove Rick Pitino knew that was going on, but
coach, it's plausible deniability is established.
Right. So, you know, you may not know this is happening. And there are other programs that aren't. Not every kid has huge value. So the thing that makes – certainly there's all that in football as well because there's more interest and more fervor for that. But the thing about basketball is one player changes the game. You know, one kid can have such an impact on a program and on a coach's ability to get a contract. In the movie, you talk about Will Wade, Sean Miller. These are coaches that have never made a Final Four. Will Wade's at LSU. He's not even Arizona. He's a big-time program. Will Wade's getting paid $2.5 million.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.